The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report, a sunny Friday here in Southern California. I put up an NBA column today on Grantland.com about the All-Star rosters and who got picked and who should have been picked. It's one of those dumb topics that sports writers do when they don't have ideas for other topics. It's fun to vent, rant, rave, discuss, debate. So why not do this on a podcast, on the line, from ESPN.com? Our old friend Mark Stein, what's happening?
Love when you do a Friday NBA column to overshadow the weekend dime. Appreciate it.
I forgot. You get all territorial about Friday afternoons.
Appreciate it. Couldn't do Monday through Thursday. Way to go.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was going to put it up yesterday, but I wanted to wait and see who made the rosters, including your pal Dirk Nowitzki, who has played exactly three good games this season and is now on the All-Star team. Defend this.
Well, we're only looking at 25 games instead of the usual 50, so I think that has to factor in to some degree. And look, you've been paying attention to this long enough to know the coaches were always going to vote him in. He even tried, you heard him come out at the beginning of the week saying, "I don't deserve to be there," which is code for coaches, please let me have the weekend off. But the defending champs, the reigning finals MVP, if Nowitzki isn't there, the Mavs don't have an all-star. No way. No way he was going to get left off. And then when he started playing well in the last week, that clinched it.
Yeah, because it's not like anybody came out of nowhere to grab that spot. Because I guess Paul Millsap was maybe the consensus choice for that forward spot. I personally voted for James Harden, even though I didn't have a vote. That would have been my pick because I'm fine with three OKC guys on this team. I think that's the best team, and they should have three guys.
Yeah, I would say those would probably be the two closest. I don't think there was a ton of support for Harden because I do think people look at that, coaches look at that and say, do we in the West where you could make a list of 25 guys, do you really want to send three from one team, especially in a season when there is no dominant team? I mean, there's no dominant team in the West. The Thunder have the best record, but, I mean, you've said it louder than anyone. This team has holes that they still haven't filled. So
I think they're the best team, though, and I think they're getting – I'm seeing – well, I guess yesterday was a bad example because they blew a game in Sacramento that they should have won, but I was really impressed by the Portland-Golden State back-to-back. I thought they showed me something in those games. I think – if you had to bet your life on a team, that's the team you'd pick to win the title. I wouldn't feel great about it, obviously, but you wouldn't feel great about any team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not ready to pick them to win the West. I think they still could use another big, and I still wonder about, do they have enough veteran know-how? You know, that Chauncey type of player that you look at the Clippers roster, you love what they've put together. Chris Paul absolutely killing it in crunch times this season. He and Blake, the most watchable duo in the league. But you look at their team, and there's no playoff experience there. And that's really where you think, okay, in the playoffs is when they're going to miss Chauncey Billups. They've got Mo Williams. They've still got Bledsoe. They don't need Chauncey Billups in the short term. But at playoff time, you want that Battier guy. Miami went out and got Battier, and they feel a lot better about themselves. I just still have my questions about OKC. When they need someone to keep Mr. Westbrook from imploding.
Let's shelve this Billups thing because I want to talk about that later in the podcast. I have an unpopular opinion alert. This is a game Dave Jacoby and I play. Unpopular opinion alert. I don't think Oklahoma City needs another big. I actually think they're fine with the bigs. I think when I look at them in crunch time, I really would much rather see them play Ibaka and Durant with Harden and Westbrook, and then that fifth guy, I feel like should be a perimeter guy. If you played the game of what player would have the biggest impact on that roster, if they could just make any sort of trade for anybody who makes $10 million or under, I would put Ray Allen as the guy that would push them over the top. To me, they need a shooter who is just money, ice, last 2 minutes. You can't leave him open. He's just going to make anything. That's what I feel like they need. You disagree?
No, I think every team wants that too. I mean, you want when you have stars like they have. I mean, they've got the two explosive guys covered. So extra length, extra shooting. I mean, I think those are things every team wants. I mean, it would be hilarious if Presti could pull that off and
right.
bring back Ray Allen after sending him away to get their whole youth movement started and make the whole thing about Durant. If they were able to somehow find a way to steal Ray Allen back, that would be a coup even beyond his usual coups.
Well, even like here's another guy, and he's not playing well this year, but it's somebody they could probably get pretty easily. Darrell Wright. You put any 6'8", say anybody from 6'5" to 6'8" that gives them the roster flexibility. In with a five-man unit where guys can kind of jump around and cover whoever, and somebody who could shoot 40% from threes. This is kind of what they want Daquan Cook to be, but he's just not that good. And I don't think Cephalosha is that good either. But when I look at that team, like, I don't really like when they play Perkins and Ibaka together in crunch time that much, because those are two guys that the other team just doesn't have to worry about at all. So now they turn into, this is what Barkley always says, he makes the same point every Thursday night on TNT, I don't like Oklahoma City in the half-court offense because they're just shooting jump shots. And it's technically true. Where his point falls apart is that's how Dallas won the title last year, right? I mean, they didn't have a low post player. It didn't stop them from winning four straight series. So I do think you can win the title shooting shots from 12 to 23 feet. The question is, they always seem to have a stiff out there offensively, and I think they need a Ibaka out there in crunch time. So if you don't have to guard him, then you have to put another guy out there that the team has to guard.
Well, that also was the best defensive team that the Mavs have ever had. I don't think OKC defends at that level.
You're right.
They just don't quite D you up the same way. But yeah, you're right. I mean, look, the Celtics went through the same thing, right? I mean, if you play Perkins in crunch time, I mean, he's just a major, major liability at the other end. He better have a huge defensive impact if he's going to be on the floor at crunch time.
And I also like when they go smaller. I think that's when they're the most dangerous, when they get a little more athletic, when they're playing Durant at the four, which is something they've always been hesitant to do. Against the right team, though, it does seem like, it does seem like a weapon. But this brings us back to the Harden thing. And I wrote this in the column today. I do feel like he's kind of there. He's kind of secretly their guy, other than Durant. Like, he's the steady of the ship. He picks his spots, but when he picks his spot, it's always a big spot, and he makes big plays. And it seems like they have a ton of confidence in him.
It's not even so much of a secret anymore. And I mean, you gotta hand it to the guy that he's going to be in line for his turn at the big money here coming up, and he just accepts that six-man role. You never hear a thing about it. It's one thing when it's an older guy like Jason Terry or Manu, who late in their careers embrace that thing. But the way James Harden just continually accepts his role, a lot of people like the guy. And that was the big question when OKC gave Westbrook all that money, is are they going to be able to keep Harden now? Everybody's coming after him.
You talked to a lot of people. What was the feedback that contract got? Did people seem to feel like at least one of the biggest reasons they did it was to kind of squash this "we might trade you" thing once and for all? It was a pretty significant commitment.
Well, I think when you look at it, we all see the flaws in the Westbrook-Durant partnership, and it's not a personality thing. These guys like each other. It's miscast as this "they can't get along" kind of thing. That has nothing to do with it. They get along great, and it's a team that generally gets along great. I mean, these guys sit next to each other on the road. It's not a personality conflict. But
Look,
we all, when you have a finisher like Durant, you would want a Rondo next to him to set him up all day long. I mean, that's just common sense. But I think the factor that people overlook when they look at Westbrook is he wants to be there. And there aren't a lot of guys who want to be in Oklahoma City. That's just the reality. Would Chris Paul, had New Orleans traded Chris Paul for Westbrook, would Chris Paul be committing his future to Oklahoma City? Debatable. Have we heard any free agents clamor to be there? The fact that Westbrook, like Durant, wants to be there for the next 5 years, that makes him a heck of a lot more valuable, and probably to me, and I think to a lot of people who are watching this thing, it overshadows the fit concerns for now. The guy wants to be there. I mean, that's hugely valuable.
And also, you get rid of the coach before you get rid of Westbrook. And maybe you don't have to get rid of either. But if it comes to a point where something's clearly not working, you change the coach first. And then if it still doesn't work, that's when you trade Westbrook.
Even at that money, he's still so tradable if the Thunder want to go that direction down the road. I mean, he's, you know, look at your Celtics. Would you want to start over with a guy like that? Of course you would.
Dude, I would have traded Rondo for anybody in the league last night. I'm so tired of watching that guy, watching teams play 6 feet off him in any big game. I mean, really, after 4 years, I think I've had enough. And if he's not going to shoot, then the Celtics just have no chance. Like, I would almost rather they just lost games with him missing 20-footers. But for him not to shoot that shot, I think he's been in – this is the sixth year in the league – then I guess it's never happening. So, you know, I look at my team, and I do think they need to make a trade. I don't think they can win with what they have. I'm not sure I'd want to build around Rondo. I don't know where that gets me. And I think he has a lot of value right now. And it's somebody they could, you know, I keep looking at, I put this in my column today. We know Dork Elvis loves Gasol. We know that Scola and maybe Kyle Lowry maybe could be available in the right trade. You know, and there does seem like there are the pieces for a three-teamer there where the Celtics could turn Rondo into Scola, Kyle Lowry, and a pick. Something like that. Rondo goes to the Lakers. The Lakers can still turn Bynum into Howard. That just seems like that's the most logical deal and the one that's probably going to happen. And if you're the Lakers and you could just somehow end up with Rondo, Kobe, and Dwight Howard out of this, it's a huge win for them.
I don't see Dwight going to the Lakers, but I can't argue with a lot of everything else you said. I actually don't quite understand why the Rockets are still so hot for Powell when it was
me neither.
When it was getting Powell, and that maybe helps you get Nene too.
Yep.
I could see it. I just don't think Powell is a big man you can build around anymore.
Agree.
I don't see it.
I agree, and I think Daryl dodged a bullet with that trade. I felt that way at the time. I thought he gave up too much, and you're putting Pau Gasol basically in the 2006 Memphis situation again, and we saw how that turned out. I still think he's one of the top 25 guys in the league. I think he could be the second best guy on a contender. There's no question. But I don't think he could be the first guy on a contender, and that's the position that he would have been in Houston. Let's go back to Howard for a second with the Lakers. I keep hearing over and over again from people I trust that there's a Dwight Kobe issue, and that's the biggest reason why he'll never go to the Lakers. I refuse to believe that it could be that and that alone why that wouldn't happen. What do you think?
I think it's more – I mean, I've heard those same things. The funny thing is we've been reading these stories in the past week that Kobe supposedly made this recruiting call that went awry when – I think you've heard the same rumble that I have.
Yeah.
It's actually the other way, and that, you know, Kobe's more mad at Dwight, that Dwight thinks he's on the downside. I don't know if any of that's even true. But just looking at this, I think Dwight, it has sunk into him finally that don't go to the Lakers and do the exact same thing that Shaq did. That's just such a bad move for him, and I just don't think he wants to do that. I mean, obviously, he has Hollywood aspirations. He wants to do things off the court and be bigger than the game itself. But don't go to L.A. and just follow the Shaq script and do the exact same thing. It's so much better for him to go to New Jersey, the Brooklyn-bound Nets, or do anything else than go to L.A. I mean, Chicago is still the one that makes, you know, so much sense to go play with Derrick Rose. But don't go to L.A.
Hold on, I'm not done throwing up yet. Can you talk again about his aspirations to do more than basketball? Because I want to officially just puke all over myself.
Come on, you know, that's no secret.
What are his aspirations? How about the aspiration of winning a title? Really, these guys make me crazy.
Basketball matters are all secondary. You know that.
Oh, my God. I don't get it. So we both agree that, you know, the other part you didn't mention is not a great situation with the Lakers. And the Laker fans go, oh, you just hate the Lakers. But with the amount of money Kobe's making these next 3 years, and you add Dwight to that, there's literally no way to improve that roster other than mid-level every year. I don't think that's a good basketball situation.
Well, and your boy Jim Buss, we know he doesn't want to trade both Bynum and Gasol. So you know what? Just move Powell for whatever it is. Move Powell for two or more players. Get some new blood in there and roll forward with Kobe, Bynum, and whoever it is you get in a Powell trade. That's what the Lakers need to do. If that is, you know, in your ornate three-team scenario where the Lakers got Rondo, fine. You know, he's right. That'd be some, you know, you put Rondo with two scorers like that, and you can mitigate his offensive limitations. That's what they need to do.
And I think Rondo, I think the Laker fans would actually really like watching Rondo. It kind of fits in with the old school Showtime thing. You know, the reason the Rondo Gasol trade never made sense, and the reason I don't believe it's true, and I don't think it's ever been discussed, is Gasol makes a lot more money than Rondo. I think he makes $7 million a year. And it's just, you'd just rather have Rondo at $11 million than Gasol at $18 million. But if Gasol, and especially with the way the Celtics are thinking right now, which is the Celtics foolishly think that they really do have a chance at Dwight Howard. I don't understand it. But every move that they've been making over these last 5-6 months has been to either go after Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, get some sort of player going forward. And what scares me as a Celtics fan is that when it doesn't work out, I think they go into full-fledged tank mode and maybe trade Rondo, let Pierce decide whether he wants to stay or not, and just blow everything up and start over. Danny's done it before. He'll do it again.
You just raised a couple things that I want to get to. A, Pierce has to retire a Celtic, yes? Come on. You can't trade him.
At this point, the choice is his. And I don't think you trade him. I don't think you say to him, we want to trade you. I think it becomes a Nash Phoenix situation. And the difference is Pierce probably would say, you know what? Why don't you trade me the Clippers? I could finish my career in L.A. Or why don't you trade me the Lakers? Whatever. He doesn't have that, you know, that 1950s Irish Catholic housewife guilt, I'm staying with the family through thick or thin thing that Nash has.
I don't know, though. I think it really means something to him to retire as a Celtic.
I think all that chatter
about Danny might blow things up got to him.
I agree with you on that. I don't know if he'd want to stay if they were gutting the team, though. I think at that point he'd probably take that personally. The crazy part of this is that Danny really does think he can get Dwight Howard. Like, he really does. And no free agent. I don't think a free agent has ever signed in Boston who was like an all NBA guy. At least to my knowledge, I think the best free agent the Celtics have ever signed has been Xavier McDaniel. The best big ticket person they ever were able to bring in was Kevin Garnett, and we all know why that happened.
Wait, what about when they stole Neek from my Clips?
Well, exactly.
My first year as a beat writer, man.
They get these guys, if it's a big name person, it's always well after it was worth getting them. It's really far-fetched for me to think that they can get Dwight, but then you look around and you think, well, the way Noah's playing, Chicago just doesn't have enough to trade for Dwight. I mean, that'd be a 40 cents in the dollar type trade. I just don't see it. The Nets, nobody's ever been able to explain to me why Orlando would accept Brook Lopez and some crappy picks, why that's a good trade for them. Like, at that point, if you're Otis Smith, I wrote this today, all right, don't you just play chicken at that point? You can pay Dwight with these new rules $30 million more than anybody else.
$30 million ain't going to get it done. It's not. Guys will walk away from the $30 million because they'll...
Who has ever walked away from that much money? Name me an NBA player in history who has ever left $30 million on the table. It's never happened.
We just saw LeBron and Bosch take pay cuts of some degree to go to Miami because they know they're going to get it back in a later deal. I mean, Dwight's young enough to get it in a later deal.
It was $8 million. I think Bosch and LeBron left $8 million apiece over the course of 4 years on the table.
Dwight can just get it later on. It's not like that money's gone to him forever. I mean,
but, why, but Why couldn't Dwight?
Now, if there was a franchise tag, or you know, if the NBA did what was discussed and wouldn't have given in to the players on this one, and done what was going to be the NBA's answer to the franchise tag, where you could give one player on your team an extra year, so it would be two more years, and now you're talking 50, 60 million, then I might see your point. But 30 million, as amazing as it sounds on paper, I don't think that's going to keep Dwight Howard in Orlando. I really don't. He figures he'll make it up in off-court endorsements and in his next contract after that. I don't think it's enough.
I think that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Not that what you said was dumb, just that if he really thinks that way, that's insane. Like, if he thinks, like, oh, I'm going to go to Brooklyn, I'm going to play with a terrible team, but at least I'll be in Brooklyn. It's going to help my marketability, and I'll go 44 and 38 every year. Like, give me a break. I just think he's better off.
You mean to tell me you think if he ends up in Brooklyn with D. Will that they won't eventually put the pieces around them to contend? I mean, that's the tough part, is getting the two studs. You're going to get the rest of the group later.
You and I both know where D. Will's ending up. I mean, come on. How long do we have to keep the charade up that he's going to be a Net next year? Seriously. How long?
Well,
wait, when the Mavericks said, you know what, we're not going to defend our title this year, we're going to let Tyson Chandler go. To me, that was, I mean, just print the Darren Williams jerseys already. Just make them. Start making them in wherever they make them. Asia? Start printing them out.
So you think it's a Miami done deal? It's all set in stone already?
I don't think that. I would bet it right now. Who wants to bet me that Darren Williams could be on the Mavericks next year? Lock it in. Done. So I think that it's going to be Dwight Howard by himself, unfortunately, in the Nets. You know.
Well, then he won't go. If that's true, then I don't know that he's going
that's
to New
true.
Jersey.
Why do we all have to lie about this, Darren Williams?
Maybe all this gambling from Orlando is the right thing to do. But I still think those two guys ending up in Brooklyn is the most likely scenario.
Is there any possible way the Mavericks could end up with both Dwight and Darren Williams? It's impossible, right?
The only way, if they got rid of everyone, they think they can ultimately create roughly 30 mil in cap room. But again, you are still asking these guys to take less than the max. It would have to be a LeBron, kind of a repeat of the LeBron-Bosch deal, where they both left a little bit on the table, maybe more than a little bit. Are those guys really going to do that? I mean, the Mavs are going to make a run at it. I mean, Sean Marion's playing so well that he's tradable now.
Yeah.
So if you trade Marion, amnesty Haywood, get rid of everybody else on the roster not named Nowitzki, you know, the Mavs think they can create in the 30 million range. Is that going to be enough for two max guys?
Well, if I'm
debatable.
If I'm Howard and I'm Darren Williams, at that point I'd rather stay with the Nets. If they decide they want to play,
you wouldn't want to play with Dirk as your number three man.
I wouldn't want to give up less money to do it, because Dirk will be like what, 15 years in the league at that point.
I don't know. Dirk as a number three man, when all he has to do is spot up in the corner. That's a pretty
is Dirk
dangerous
in shape
thing.
Yet? Has Dirk stopped celebrating the title yet? What's the statute of limitations on celebrating the title?
He's back to normal.
I know. He's had three solid games in a row.
Well, that's like half the season this year already.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
We're looking at 25 games.
It would be something if they won this, if they repeated as champs with the way Dirk started and without Chandler, who was the reason they won the title.
Well, I'm not ready to say they can repeat as champs, but in the West, has anybody run miles away from them?
No, nobody.
I mean, 2 weeks ago we were thinking Denver had really figured it out, and look what's happened to them.
No, nobody. Did you really think that? Please tell me you didn't think that.
They were a very dangerous team, yeah. I mean, with especially with the way this season sets up and so many games and having depth, I mean, they looked good early.
I think people, from the stuff I've read from people I respect, it does seem like people keep making the same mistake of thinking that succeeding with this regular season schedule somehow translates to succeeding in the postseason. I just don't see it. I think you need specific things for this specific season to succeed, which is why we've seen Denver in the West and Philly in the East kind of overachieve to some degree. I don't think Philly has any chance to make the finals, and I don't think Denver has any chance to make the finals.
Well, Okay, but the difference is Philly and Indiana, and I'm more of an Indiana guy than a Philly guy. I really like the Pacers now. The only time I've seen them in person was the greatest night of Paul George's life. And if you're looking at that team, you're wondering why have they not traded Danny Granger to fill in their other gaps because right. Paul George should be starting.
Yep.
But there's no Miami and Chicago in the West. Miami and Chicago are the clear favorites in the East, and you know something crazy is going to have to happen to keep them out of the East Finals. That's not the case in the West. I mean,
So
that's why I think Denver has a better ceiling than those teams.
I think Indiana has the best ceiling because of their cap space and their trade pieces. I don't feel like the Indiana team we're watching right now is the team that's going to finish the season. And I saw them in person on Saturday night, and I got to be honest, Danny Granger's just not that good.
How'd you pull that bird thing off, by the way? I thought that was the one guy you just felt like you would never be able to actually sit there and not melt into a puddle of awe.
You know what happened? I stayed up late the night before. I worked on a lot, very little sleep hours, and that made me not nervous. And also, like, when am I ever going to be more prepared to interview anybody than Larry Bird? You know, it's like there's no answer he could give me that would knock me off track because I know most of the answers already. He didn't
surprise me. You know him better than he knows himself.
I haven't followed the guy since 1978. Like. The one thing that he said that shocked me though was when he said he would have retired in 1988 if Bias had lived. I was dumbfounded by that. But
is he going to be our first ever coach of the year, MVP, and executive of the year?
Possibly. Well, they're a really interesting team because out of all the teams that are out there, they're the team that could make a monster move, and it could go in a couple different ways. They have cap space to absorb somebody's contract. I'm almost positive they have their own number one pick, right?
Yeah, and when I said best ceiling, I meant speaking this year only. There's no question their long-term outlook is awesome. I mean, they have Granger to trade, who there will be interest in him. We know that they've loved Eric Gordon for ages, and the assumption is they're going to try to get him one way or another. I mean, they could make a move this year where they're the only team in the league that could take on Kamen and – you know, they have
for
the
nothing.
Salary cap space to do it.
Yep. Or somebody else who's on a team that we're not thinking of yet who falls out of the race. Like, for instance, our buddy Steve Nash. What if Phoenix just looks at this on March 14th?
Steve Nash will not be traded this season.
Definitely?
I would say definitely.
See, I don't get that. If I'm Steve Nash and it's March 14th, and my NBA season is going to be done in 5 weeks, and then I'm a free agent. And my team comes to me and says, we can turn you into Darren Collison and Indiana's 2012 number one pick. You get to play on this Indiana team. They're renting you for 3 months. You get to be in the playoffs. You get to play in the heart of basketball country. This will be fun for you and your family. Just what do you think? How does he turn that down?
How can your hero, Larry Bird, give up quality assets for a rental like that?
Because Darren Collison is a middle – is he like the 18th best point guard in the league?
Well, I think it's probably the picks involved that would they be more hesitant about. But this is the –
So they give up the 20th pick in the draft?
The Suns' problem is they've waited too long now. What are you going to get for Steve Nash at the deadline when – I mean, you better – the team that trades for him wants to be sure they can keep him.
But if I'm the Pacers,
I think rentals. It's more of a baseball thing. I mean, you just don't see rentals in the NBA very often.
I know, but here's a season where you'd see it right now, straight the lockout season, where when you I think we only have one season to look at that was like this, and it was 1999, and an 8 seed made the finals, the New York Knicks. I just feel like it's wide open, and if I'm the Pacers and I have a chance to get Nash. For the price of Collison and the 23rd pick in the draft and get my fans excited and bring in all that extra playoff money and tell my fans, like, look, you stuck with us after the Artest melee. You could have walked away. You didn't. Now here we go. We're going to try to really contend for this year. I think you have to do it.
I just don't think Phoenix is going to look at this till after the season. I really don't. I think Nash is going to finish the year in Phoenix, and then they're going to figure out where to go with it. The vibe I get is that they, for one, Nash is just not pushing for it. And two, they just don't feel like they can get enough now at this point when Nash is 38 and about to hit free agency. Can they get enough to justify it?
Now, let's talk about Granger.
Maybe he'll prove me wrong. Maybe the Pacers are going to call them and throw a nice fat offer at them, but they don't think so. They're not expecting it.
Let's talk about Granger, because I'm continually unimpressed by him, and I think he's overrated. I like him. I think he's one of those guys that all of us have always liked, but took on maybe too much of a responsibility. He's a guy that's, I think, on a really good team, should be its third best player, maybe even its fourth best player, and somehow he's become the quote-unquote best player in Indiana, and really he's a guy who shoots jump shots, basically. I don't think he's a great defender or anything. And I like Paul George, and that's actually a better spot for him playing small forward than where they have him. What could they get for Danny Granger?
Well, he's kind of their voice. You know, I think that's why he's been there so long. He's kind of like the team spokesman, so that's why he has that prominence. Now, I think in recent years they've always been somewhat hesitant to move him, but now you'd have to think that they'd be willing. But, I mean, the fact is he's not having a great season, shooting less than 40% from the field.
He couldn't even make the All-Star team as their All-Star rep.
Yeah, and that was interesting that the coaches picked Hibbert over him. That was kind of a sign right there of his standing. I think there would still be interest in him, but here's the other thing. In-season trades this year are tough to gauge in general, just because it's been so hard for a lot of these teams to get on the same page as it is, with everything so compressed and no practice time, that I wonder, is that maybe dissuading teams from trying to make big moves in season, because now you got to start all over again and there's just no time to get on the same page?
Mm. Would you trade Granger for Nash and Dudley?
Well, I mean, I would if I was Indy.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm Phoenix. I think Phoenix wants the flexibility now. Sarver's taken so many bullets for the way this team's been deconstructed, and you know, it's so ground down and it's a shell of what it was. That I don't know. I don't see them. I don't see them having interest in Granger.
Yeah, Granger's just not playing that well. Be interesting if I was looking at Atlanta as a team that could make a move at any given time that nobody would expect. And Josh Smith is always kind of lurking in these trade rooms.
Yeah, but they're another team that whenever you talk about them making moves, you have to look at the money they'd be taking back, because they're another team that doesn't want to take in any money with their messed up ownership situation. So, you know, that's a team where you thought, shouldn't they just gamble and trade for Dwight? And just, you know, Dwight's from there, and, you know, he's given no indication he wants to go there. But shouldn't they be the team that just says, we'll give you, you know, Smith and Horford or whatever, you know, whatever it takes.
Just hope they keep him?
And, yeah, just try to talk him into it and just hope that being home kind of magically changes Dwight's mind and he gets romanced by the idea of playing at home. I mean,
I've written about this, but it's confusing to me that players care so much about where they play. Like, even today, Brandon Jennings, like, talking about a quote-unquote bigger market. Like, at this point in life, it doesn't matter where you play, really. I mean, it matters where you live if you like warm weather and stuff like that. But to make it seem like you don't have opportunities because you're playing for Milwaukee doesn't totally make sense to me. Kevin Durant plays in the smallest market in the NBA, and everybody knows who he is because he's good, and this team's
good. Again, that's what makes Westbrook so special to them in spite of all the warts, because he wants to stay. And, you know, it's more typical to see what Brandon Jennings just did. That's the usual, not Westbrook wanting to stay. I don't know why either. I mean, why is winning not the most important thing? I mean,
yeah,
you know, we always wonder that, but it isn't.
You'd think it would be. So you don't think if you had to guess, if you had to bet your life on it, you know, I love asking the bet your life part, you don't think there's going to be a major trade this year?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say that. I think it's going to really ramp up between March 1st and March 15th on the deadline. I just think Nash is really not in play.
Okay, who is in play then? Danny Granger, maybe. Rondo?
Yeah, and even Dwight. I mean, Orlando's or everything starts with Dwight. I mean, he's still the major domino here, and everyone that I talk to is convinced that you really can't judge the thing till we get past the All-Star game. The Magic have made it clear. Don't even bring this up till they get past the All-Star game in Orlando. But once the All-Star game passes, I mean, it's 15 days. It's a 15-day window for the rest of their life. That's when repeating the whole Shaq episode of 96 becomes real for them. And I mean, are they really going to roll the dice and watch him walk away in the summer? I mean, they were lucky enough. I mean, it's a miracle to get a guy like Dwight 8 years after Shaq leaves. Do you really want to tempt fate and watch him walk away for nothing and then see how long it's going to take for you to draft somebody else like that?
I guess the only way it would make sense for me if they traded him was if it also allowed them to get rid of the Turkoglu contract.
And even right, and that's one of the things that New Jersey deal did. Now, remember, the last deal that New Jersey was trying to assemble had another team in it, and they would have got Gerald Wallace on top of it. Now, that still maybe isn't enough for people if you get Brook Lopez, Gerald Wallace, picks, and you get rid of Turkoglu, and you get rid of Duhon. But that's the idea. The Nets know that if they're going to trade for him now, it's going to have to be a 3 or 4 team deal where they rope some other teams into it. It's not just going to be a New Jersey for Orlando, you know, New Jersey Orlando 2-team swap.
Well,
you're the maestro of the trade machine.
You need expiring.
Start hatching out some 4-team scenarios.
Well, ironically, one of those teams is the Celtics. The Celtics can put together any combination of contracts to take back. I think Turkoglu makes 11, and I think Chris Duhon and Quentin Richardson make like a combined 6, and then Dwight makes 18. So that's $35 million total, and you have to come within, I think, 75%. So you have to give them $28 million back. KG makes 20. So you do KG and Rondo for Howard and all those bad contracts right now. And if you're Orlando, you have to think about that because you end up with Rondo and you've shed every single contract you have. I mean, you can even throw Jameer Nelson in there and get Jermaine O'Neal's expiring contract back. Like, there's ways that they could use Howard to basically clean house. My question would be, if I have to use my best player to clean up all the terrible moves I made over the last couple of years, then why do I still have the same GM who made all those terrible moves?
Well,
that part's never been explained.
I'm with you there. I mean, it cracks me up when I hear this stuff about maybe they should fire Stan to try to keep Dwight.
Right.
Stan Van Gundy is going to be the star there when Dwight leaves. I mean, he's going to be – I mean, we know he can coach. I mean, he's going to be just about the best asset they have. But, yeah, I mean, the moves that Otis Smith has made, I'm not quite sure why he continues to have the full backing of ownership there, but – I mean, you heard their owner come out this week and say, we don't want to trade him. You know, those 15, 18 days after the trade deadline or after All-Star weekend are going to be wild. And when you just ask who's going to make a trade, I mean, you know your boy Ainge is going to be at the front of the line trying to do something. I mean, he wants to make a move badly.
Yeah, he will trade anybody in the team, including himself. And then the other part is if Dwight ends up either staying or heading somewhere other than New Jersey, then all of a sudden Darren Williams is thrown into the mix, like kind of a, like almost like the special at a restaurant when you're ordering dinner. Oh,
well,
tonight,
right, just like
just
last
wanted
year
to tell you,
nobody thought D. Will was getting traded, and then the Jazz did that right before the buzzer, and that was, you got to take your hats off to the Jazz. They were proactive. They moved quick.
Yep.
They gave themselves. They have a nice little future going with all the big men they've amassed there. But yeah, you're exactly right. New Jersey's stance is we are, you know, D. Will is 100% untouchable until the day they know that Dwight is out of reach. And if Dwight is out of reach, then D. Will suddenly becomes very available.
And at that point, they start looking at, you know, maybe flipping them straight up for Gasol, which is a trade I think makes a ton of sense, actually.
Yeah, because the Lakers we know the Lakers want a point guard, and even though you have D. Will written to Dallas in very permanent ink, he is a Dallas guy, but he also loves the West Coast. He has a home in San Diego. I think Darren Williams would be very happy to wind up with the Lakers.
Yes. And then the other team where that could happen is your Dallas Mavericks. Because they could put together the, you know, you get Roddy Bobois, who's been playing well this year. You get, they got some expirings. They could take back a couple of bad contracts. Like, there's ways that could work pretty easily. So
on that score, I'm not so sure I agree with you. I think the Mavs, pretty much their stance is whoever we want, we really need them to get the free agency in July. If they have to start making in-season moves, it's going to be a lot tougher for them. They just don't have the assets. They don't have the picks.
What is I've been meaning to ask you this for weeks. What's the best explanation you've heard for why the Lakers traded Lamar Odom?
The best explanation I've heard is that Lamar was obviously deeply, deeply hurt when the New Orleans deal went down, and he didn't get advance notice of it. And basically Lamar and his agent, Jeff Schwartz, went to the Lakers and said, look, Lamar has been a great soldier here. He's been playing on a very low contract number for a long time. He's done everything you asked, sixth man of the year, and send him somewhere good. Send him to a good situation. And I don't know why, but the Lakers agreed. And they sent him to the Mavs. And I'm as stunned as you, because, you know, there's other teams with cap room who I think would have gratefully taken him on.
See, that's why I'm a naturally suspicious person. That's where I get a little suspicious, because you don't see sports teams just say, you know what, let's be the magnanimous ones here. Hey, Lamar, thanks for all the hard work. We're going to send you to Dallas, and we're not going to really get anything back. This would be great for both
of us. So give me another plausible theory, and I will happily chase it down for you.
I mean, I can tell you what the rumor is. I hate passing along rumors, but I think maybe there were some chemistry issues. Maybe it was time for him to leave.
But that maybe still doesn't explain things... why you just send him to Dallas. You could send him – there were plenty of teams. You're telling me – If they had called the Sacramento Kings wouldn't have snapped Lamar Odom up in a second.
I'm telling you, I wish the Celtics had gotten him. If you're going to offer him a contender,
Suns would have. You know, the Phoenix Suns were crestfallen to see someone like Lamar Odom just donated to the Mavericks. If they wanted to trade him, there's other places they could trade him.
Nash has wanted to play with Odom for years.
Why Dallas? Why would the Lakers agree to send him to the team that just took their title away?
It's a fantastic question, and I still have not heard an awesome answer for it. My favorite explanation, which I obviously I have no idea if this is true or not, was that Chloe was talking to Mrs. Kobe, and some Kobe found out, and all of that big Laker mess from that month is all tied together in some way.
Okay, but
by the way, I don't
true,
know if that's
even
true.
Even if all that's true, it still doesn't account for how he ended up in Dallas. I mean, why the Lakers wanted to move him, you know, to me that's the smaller part of the mystery.
Yeah. How do you feel like he's at least playing better? Like, are we going to hear from Lamar Odom in the playoffs, in your opinion?
I mean, I'm really surprised it's taken him this long to get going. I've always been a fan of his. And I think he has to realize that he could have gone to worse situations, far worse situations than this. And what's so crazy is Chloe has settled in Dallas super fast. She seems super comfortable here. So usually when you have to move like that, if your wife is happy, usually that should spark you on the court. You don't have to worry about off-court stuff. But it's just taken him so long to get going. Now, he did have a brutal summer personally. And
yes, he did.
The effect of all that is it kept him off the court. The summer before, he played for Team USA and had the best year of his career. This summer, he did nothing because of everything that was happening to him off the court, didn't train like he normally does. And I think deep down, he wishes that the lockout wiped out the whole season because he wasn't mentally ready to play. And now he's got to deal with a trade and a new system and all that goes in it. It's just not firing for him. But they're still hopeful that they can get him going. And if he does get going, he's obviously not Tyson Chandler, but it's an interesting different way for the Mavs to do things.
In all seriousness, the best explanation I've heard was that the Lakers were not crazy about the filming of that reality show and that whole circus around everything that was happening with it. And then when he said he was unhappy and threw a tantrum after they almost traded him, I think they kind of looked around and said, you know what, screw this. Let's get him. Let's get rid of him. Let's get a pick. We have an exception. We'll be able to use it. I think maybe they foolishly thought they had a chance at Dwight Howard, and that exception would help them be able to absorb a contract. And they just plowed ahead and did it.
I know at that point they even still thought they had a shot at Chris Paul. They thought even after they traded Odom that they could still put together a deal for Paul because your Rockets loved Powell so much.
My Rockets. We talked about the West Coast or the Western Conference. The Eastern Conference, you seem to think the Bulls are a lock. You seem to think Miami and Chicago, that's a lock. That's going to be our Eastern Finals. I don't know if I feel the same way. Is it all right that I don't feel the same way?
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong. I never want it to be a lock. I want to be surprised. I love the West like it is. There's always that theory in sports that it's better to have one big behemoth for everybody to hate. I've never liked it that way. So I hope I'm wrong. And like I said, I'm a huge Doug Collins fan, but I'm more of a Pacer guy than a Philly guy at this point because I think their team's a little bit more versatile. I think they're probably the only ones that can get in the way and maybe mess things up. But I can't really see Miami or Chicago losing to anyone else in the conference.
I'm not as sold on the Bulls as some others. I don't feel like they're any better than they were last year.
What don't you like?
I think they had the same issue they had last year. They're very predictable in the last 5 minutes. It's going to one guy and that's it. They haven't solved the problem.
But not predictable enough to lose in the first two rounds. To beat Miami,
I think they
that's
could lose
another matter.
I think they could lose in the second round, potentially. I think they could lose to whoever the three seed is. And especially, like, you talk about a team that can't afford an injury. Like, what happens to Derrick Rose? What happens if Derrick Rose sprains an ankle? Or think of all the bad injuries.
Well, you say that, but they have nothing but injuries, and they keep winning. Team is just – somebody's always hurt.
But that's what I'm saying. They're built for the regular season. I worry about them in a seven-game series. I thought that Miami game – was really interesting two Sundays ago with from both sides. It was the same problems that we have come to expect from both teams, and they all kind of bloomed in that game. And it's like nobody from the Bulls stepped up other than Rose, and he had to take every shot, and you knew where the ball was going every time, which is not how you want to be in the playoffs. And then on Miami's side, everybody got tight with 2 minutes left. So, hey, I don't know. I would say in a normal year, yeah, you're right. It's going to be Miami, Chicago. But this year with the schedule and all the nagging little injuries and all that stuff, like, you could see one of those teams get bounced.
Well, there just wasn't enough time after the lockout for anyone to dramatically change who they are unless it was a team like Dallas that's taking a step back intentionally for salary cap positioning. I mean, Miami, right. Chicago... I mean, what were these teams really going to do to hugely change the way they look when we last saw them? There just isn't enough time.
Well, Chicago tried with the Rip Hamilton thing, and, you know, I don't want to write him off, but it seems like he might be at a different point.
Well, that's a team, I think, where we're wondering what kind of trades we're going to see. Guys like J.R. Smith coming back from China, I mean, he's an interesting guy, and you hear rumbles that Chicago is wavering. He really doesn't fit into their mold chemistry-wise, but because the Rip thing isn't exactly working out to perfection, does Chicago say, you know what, should we jump in the bidding there? Should we try to get J.R. Smith here? I mean, that would be interesting.
I'm glad this came full circle because I promised we'd talk Chauncey, and then we'll go. Look, Chauncey had a real leadership impact on this team, there's no question. It hurts them not to have him for the season, there's no question. But I think he was the most dispensable guy out of the top seven. And you mentioned, you know, Randy Foy and Bledsoe being able to get his minutes, and it's not a total disaster from that end. I didn't think Chauncey was playing that well. And, you know, the good stuff that he was doing was he was bringing stuff to the table. And he was taking a lot of stuff off the table. And the big thing for me that scared me about Chauncey was that he will take the biggest shot of any game. He will take the two biggest shots of any game because he still thinks he's Chauncey Billups, and he's not. And Vinny Del Negro did not have the testicular fortitude to either take him out when he wasn't playing well or to make sure that the ball was going to go to the right place at the right point of the game. And, you know, I just don't think Chauncey's that good of a player anymore. Look at it statistically, he's just not. Defensively, he's was trying to guard two guards. It was embarrassing.
Okay, but I think you do have to factor in, though, that he was adjusting to playing off the ball more, which is
newer. He's been doing that for 2 years. Stop.
He's never played with someone like Chris Paul.
It's basketball. These guys, their entire lives have been going onto a basketball court, and they have four new teammates, and you learn how to play with each other. That's basketball.
I agree with some of what you're saying. Playing with Chris Paul is the easiest thing in the world. I feel like all of those Pistons from 2004 have always kind of swanned around like it's still 2004 and that the basketball world stops and ends with them. I do agree with you on that thing. But again, I think Chauncey's true impact and what the Clippers are going to miss is not going to be felt until the playoffs. That team has no playoff experience. And we know old wins in the NBA and experience wins in the NBA. And that's why your Celtics might still be the most dangerous wild card in the East playoffs because they all know how to play in the playoffs. And it does matter. It matters in the NBA like no other sport.
The Celtics can't protect the rim anymore. They are a non-factor. But back to Chauncey. There's a confidence that he brings. This is what was so interesting. Look, I think I've been to 9 Clipper games. I've watched pretty much all of the games except for when I was at the Super Bowl. And there's a confidence about him that does seem to infect the other guys. And I will not argue against that. But, man, he takes his confidence in what he is at this point in his career so far exceeds what he actually is. I thought it was a real problem for them. The other thing is the way that Clipper team was built, they're so ill-equipped to handle Manu, Kobe, Dwayne Wade. Like, these are 3 of the 4 guys they're going to see at some point in the playoffs if they ever really do make a run. Any real two guard has their way with them. And maybe by Chauncey, you know, getting pushed to the side here, maybe that will force them now to go get a real two-guard who could play defense, because that, I think, was the biggest hole they had even before they got Kenyon Martin.
Well, and that's maybe where it hurts, too, because without him, it's harder to make that trade now. This overflowing depth they had at point is obviously, a chunk's been taken out of that now. So how willing are they to go? Now, are you going to move? Mo Williams has been playing great, and everybody was in love with him until he decided this week to come out and say that he should be getting a contract extension.
Such an idiot. What an idiot. You forgot to mention that his contract next year.
Yeah, what Brandon Jennings told our man Chris Broussard was mind-boggling, but Mo's might have even been more out there.
Well, this is another reason why this Chauncey thing hurt the Clips. Because they had the best possible Mo Williams. Because he's one of those guys that if he has it, you keep him in. If he doesn't have it, you pull him out. Kind of like what you had with J.J. Barea in the last year. And Billups was kind of the security blanket so that if it wasn't working out for Mo Williams, this is fine. We can still play Chauncey. And now it's like you never want to rely too much on Mo Williams, which is the position they're in right now. But they do have some trade pieces, though, because they have Foy, who makes, like, I think 4. I think they have Gomes, who makes 4. They have Bledsoe, who a lot of people like, who they wouldn't even include in the Chris Paul deal. It's a team that, if they wanted to, they could flip those 3 guys for Ray Allen right now. And I actually think Danny Ainge thinks about that. If he thinks that maybe the Celtics are tanking the season or that they're not going to make it.
With or without Ray Allen, and even without Chauncey Billups, you could still make a case that the Clippers could win the West. And we've never, ever been able to say that.
It's amazing. How about the Clippers have 2 All-Star starters?
You know who their last All-Star starter was, don't you? This should be a gimme question for you.
Is it Danny Manning?
World Be Free, 1980.
Oh, my God.
San Diego Clips. The L.A. Clips have never had one, and now they got 2.
That's a good one to end it on. Steiny Mo, we will read your weekend dime this weekend on ESPN.com. And we will continue to see you on all the ESPN outlets, and we'll talk to you before the All-Star break. Hope all is well, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.